Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Happy New Year, everyone. My name is Jim, and I'm joined by my partner, Eddie. Eddie, good evening. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good evening. Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. Happy 2010.
Off to a flying start. And now that football season has ended for a lot of us, there's no excuse now to not pay attention to hockey. Jets still have at least one more game, but for us Giant fans, the football season is over, so it's time to focus on hockey 100%. Eddie, did you hear this latest trade rumor that's going around the internet today for the Rangers?
I have not. I try not to pay attention to the trade rumors because, really, let's face it, the team is set. Why do we need to make a trade? No, I haven't been privy. Why mess with such a good thing?
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The Rangers
right?
are red hot. Why change anything about this team? Well, like, you know, these hockey rumors, I don't really I don't put any stock in them at all. But I just thought this was funny because this has been I've seen this discussed on about five different message boards today. Ilya Kovalchuk and a potentially low-round draft choice to the Rangers, to the Thrashers, Brandon Dubinsky, Michael Roosevelt, Ryan McDonough, or Bobby Sanguinetti, Christopher Higgins, a 2010 first-round draft pick, 2011 first-round draft pick, and a 2011 second-round draft pick. And then the post-trade move would be to send Wade Redden to Hartford to make salary cap room. Now, you know, I mean... These hockey rumors are just great.
Who came up with that one? That Dopey Eklund or one of those other morons?
Shrekland? I don't know. But I love this. You know, and now it's come to it's gotten so bad on the internet these days with the rumors and websites and blogs and everything that everybody has to preface their when they post a rumor. And this one's no different. It says, this is a rumor from a pretty reliable source who has correctly predicted many past trades and free agent signings. Take it with a grain of salt, but it sounds pretty realistic.
Realistic?
Pretty realistic. Why?
I mean,
why would the Thrashers trade a 50-goal scorer for an 8-goal scorer, a no-goal scorer, a kid who's 3 years away from the NHL, a guy who's up and down from the AHL? We don't know any, you know, you don't know what he's going to do in the NHL. Christopher Higgins, who I guess his trade value is up now with the big goal last night, and a couple of draft picks. I love these rumors. Nandar says we should throw in Valley to seal the deal.
I mean, you know, with well, First of all, wasn't Kovalchuk a UFA, Kovalchuk a UFA at the end of the season? So the Rangers would have to sign him at the end of the season anyway.
I believe
that. I'm pretty sure. And Higgins is a UFA at the end of the season. So what, they need Higgins as a replacement? First of all, there's so many first-round draft picks we were giving away. I mean, for like 5 years? No, give it a break. That's somebody who's just got too much time on their hands. Glenn Taylor can't even look at the waiver wire. Right now he's going crazy because Eric Christensen is doing so well. He can't even monitor the waiver wire. He wants to do a 30-for-1 trade? Give me a break.
Well, the thing about this trade is if Glenn makes this trade, he can hibernate until the 2012 draft.
Yeah, he can be up there in Banff, chewing on that cigar, drinking his whatever his Aspis Blue Monty. Speaking of which, I haven't seen Charlie in a while, but that's just ludicrous. I mean, come on, who comes up with the kind of deal? Garbage players at them for draft picks. I mean, you know, McDonough has come down a little bit as far as his value goes. I think the word absurd is my take on that.
Preposterous.
Wow.
And since we're on the subject of preposterous, how about this?
After the game, the U.S. Olympic team was announced, and two New York Rangers will be on that team, Captain Chris Drury and alternate Captain Ryan Callahan. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to New York Rangers hockey. Sam Rosen along with Joe Micheletti and Dave Maloney, and what a great, great tribute to two fine New York Rangers, Chris Drury and Ryan Callahan.
Chris Drury is a fine, fine New York Ranger.
Don't you know sarcasm when you hear it?
Wow.
No.
Chris Drury. You know, they love to, you know, that MSG broadcast, they just love to pump up Chris Drury. He's a fine, fine New York Ranger because he does the coat drive.
Yeah, you know, he donated a stuffed animal. Okay. You know, just think, in 2014, when all this is over, I think there's going to be a lot of words to describe his tenure here as a blue shirt. And it's not going to be a fine, fine Ranger. It's going to be, oh, my God, I'm glad it's over. This guy was a disgrace.
Do you remember the scene? Do you remember the scene in Shawshank Redemption? After Tim Robbins crawls out of the crap pipe, takes his shirt off in the pouring rain, and throws his hands up to the heavens. That will be Ranger fans when that contract expires. There's just going to be it'll be 50,000 Ranger fans just standing out throwing their hands to the heavens. And Frosty has dropped the first Drury does the little things to win games comment of the evening.
Yes. They're so little, no one can notice them. And as a matter of fact, winning, we're behind last year totals. But I wanted to say that, can't you just open it with congratulations to Chris Drury and Ryan Callahan? They've been chosen to represent the United States, and good luck to them. They've been chosen. But he has to say a fine, fine Ranger. Now, I'm pretty sure Sam doesn't know what he's talking about these days. I think he's lost it a little bit. You know, he's got to toe the corporate line. We've said that before. He's got to pretend. But, doesn't he realize around message boards and the fans that every message board and forum are looking for any reason or any financial or fiscal way to get Chris Drury off this team? I mean, people are doing some fuzzy math, sending him down. I heard they were going to start the World Hockey Association again, just maybe so that they could trap them and get them out of here. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things going on here, Sam. You got to catch up. You got to get you got to get your nose on the pulse of the fan here.
And you can insert your own joke about the nose. You know, Sam Rosen is the hardest working man in broadcast television. He did the Ranger game on Saturday, flew out to Arizona, and did the Packers-Cardinals game on Sunday on Fox. And then last night he did the Fiesta Bowl. That guy's working his ass off. He must be short on cash or something.
Well, he may be working on those hair transplants because that toupee is getting a little thin, a little worse for wear. But, yeah, Sam is a professional. I understand that, but he has no clue what's really going on with the Rangers. And I think that's because he's multitasking so much. Again, what is he going to say? We've always bagged on that versus broadcast. And the guy who does the play-by-play is almost unlistenable. He kept saying the rotation play. I thought the rotation play was in baseball. Now he's bringing it over to hockey. But I got to say one thing about Andy Brickley. I actually like Andy Brickley. I thought he was okay because he actually was talking about the Ranger fans and them reacting to the salaries that guys are paid. And you will never hear that on an MSG broadcast. They will never allude to how much money the players are making. And I wonder why that is.
Ooh. Any clue? Well, who owns MSG?
James Dolan.
Yeah, and who owns the team?
James Dolan.
Thank you. Enough said. All right, just to set the show up for you tonight, we're gonna be joined by former New York Ranger NHL great John O'Gronick. We'll be here with us in a few minutes. And then a little bit later in the show, we will be joined by Mr. Mitch Beck, and he is bringing along he's bringing with us tonight Devin Didiomidi from the Hartford Wolfpack. And I apologize if I'm getting some feedback. I'm not on a hardwire connection. I'm on Wi-Fi, so Mandar was telling me I'm getting a little feedback. I apologize for that. There's really nothing I can do about it.
I was going to say, Amanda probably has that speakerphone cracked up to 20. You sound good to me.
That too. And, you know, I'm just kind of running around the neighborhood stealing Wi-Fi from everybody. So I got to take it where I can get it. So anyway, we had, since the last time we talked to you guys, the Rangers dropped the game on New Year's Eve, 2-1 win over the Hurricanes, and then a 2-1 overtime loss to the Hurricanes on Saturday, and then a roller coaster in the last 5 minutes of it anyway, against the Bruins last night, Chris Higgins getting the game winner. And if there was ever a team that could be with 6 minutes to go in the game with a 2-0 lead and get a power play and still manage to screw it all up, it's our beloved New York Rangers. I mean, that power play was like a death knell for them last night.
I saw it coming. If you follow me on that Twitter and the Twitter and the Twacker and all that stuff, I said, listen, the Rangers don't have the urgency to win and close out this game. This game is going to get tight real soon if they don't start looking like they're going to win again. They took the third period off. They took the whole period off. And then the two goals, and all of a sudden, everybody is just... And then the Garden comes alive. I'm not blaming the fans. I mean, you know, it wasn't the most exciting game in the world, but listen, it was 2-0 Rangers. I couldn't believe we had a 2-goal lead. And then all of a sudden, Roosevelt's in the net. Mark Stahl's been playing a great game. You say he was out of position. I didn't see it. I didn't see a replay of it. And then all of a sudden it's 2-1, and it's 2-2, and then it's a whole thing. And now all of us are on the ledge ready to jump. And then what happens, Jim Schmiedeberg?
Chris Higgins, our savior.
Mrs. O'Higgins.
picks the perfect time to get his first goal at Madison Square Garden this year. And lifts the Rangers to a 3-2 win. Hey, you know, we'll take these wins any way we can get them. You know, we keep saying this is a tough month for the Rangers. So the schedule's just brutal. And getting a win against Boston last night, they might have had a little hangover from that Winter Classic over the weekend, which was fantastic. Great job done by the NHL and by the city of Boston. It was a terrific game and a great presentation. They might have had a little hangover from that, but whatever. We'll take the win any way we can get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll take the 2 points. I thought they were going to be in for I tell you, Boston was flat. They had a case of insomnia. And the Rangers have to get them going at home. They were not playing well at home, and they look good in the last, they look good in the first two periods. It came out great. The first period was very good, but, you got to call it out. So the Rangers get the win, and they've got to win. I thought Tuukka Rask really was at fault for that third goal. He tried to cheat to the other side of the net, and Higgins, it was a nice goal, hey. And Kotalik woke up. Got that booming slap shot on the power play. If this guy can do anything, even strength, you can make a case for him. But he's such a liability defensively as well as even strength. It's tough to justify the contract. And a lot of Ranger fans are clamoring now, these Monday morning quarterbacks. Well, we should have re-signed Antropov at $3.5-4 million he wanted and not and got Kotalik. But, Ranger fans like to do that now. But at the time when Antropov asked for that kind of money, Ranger fans were like, what? And then Glenn Sather was like, really? And, yeah, so it didn't get done. So we'll see.
Yeah, as I always thought that was a funny line. Glenn Sather and Kraft, when asked about Nick Antropov, said his agent was asking for ridiculous money. And the first thing that crossed my mind is if Glenn Sather thinks it's ridiculous money, imagine the numbers. he put the ridiculous numbers. If you guys in the chat room, if you could keep us posted on the World Juniors game, I'd appreciate it because keep us abreast of what's going on. So we're gonna. Be joined by John Ogranek. Let me know when he's ready to go, Eddie, and we'll put him right on. And then a little later, we have Devin Didiomidi from the Hartford Wolfpack going to join us with Mitch Beck.
Okay.
Hold on. I just saw your. Let me put Eddie. I'll put you on mute here so you can get John ready, and I'll tell that joke I know. Okay. So, and then just so you guys know, next Tuesday night we're going to have former Ranger Bob Brook on. He'll talk about his time with the Rangers. It'd be a good time to have him on with the Olympics coming up and get his thoughts on the Olympics. And according to Frosty, Canada is already up 1-0 over the USA. Thank you, Frosty. Appreciate the update. And I was trying to work something out with USA Hockey to see if they'd let us talk to Derek Stepan like we did last week with Chris Kreider, but my phone calls went unreturned. But it's a busy time for them, so we'll see what happens. We may still be able to pull that off. Might be a short notice thing like Chris Kreider, but we'll see what happens. So, yeah, next week we're going to have Bob Brook on, and then hopefully maybe the week after that we might have Emil Francis back on. I'm trying to get in touch with him to see if he wants to come on again. And we'll get his insight and thoughts on everything that's going on. And while we wait for Eddie to come back with John Ogranek, have him in just a minute for you guys. So let's see what else we got going on. It goes fine. In case you can't hear, my dog is barking in the background. That's always good. But anyway, all right. And we'll take your phone call, 646-478-4692. We'll get to those a little bit later in the show. And if you guys have questions for John or for Devin, as always, you can put them in the chat room. And we will we'll pass them along and see what's going on. Just to set up for John Ogranek, he was with the Rangers for 5 seasons. Came from the Quebec Nordiques, actually. And before that, he was with the Red Wings. And then after the Rangers let him go, he returned to Detroit to finish his career. He finished with over, I believe his final goal tally was 402 goals, something like that. And he had a couple of good seasons with the Rangers, 42 goals 1 year and 38 the other. So bear with me a second, guys. I got a technical difficulty here. Okay, sorry about that. What can I tell you? Live radio technical glitch. Just waiting for Eddie to come back with John Ogrodnik, and that should be in about a minute from now. and then Devin Diomede probably in about, I guess, about an hour from now. And then, again, Bob Brook next week. And then I believe Eddie has a surprise for us planned. He told me before he had a surprise for us later in the show, so we'll talk about that. Yeah, just to fill you guys in, since my technical glitches and everything else that's been going on, I have relocated. I'm out in Phoenix now instead of South Florida. My wife got a job out here, and we wanted to get out of South Florida to get my to raise my daughter. So I'm out here in Phoenix now. Been here for about 2 weeks. So, and that's why we've had issues with internet and everything else, and just being able to get set up. And that's why I kind of wasn't on the site for about a week. I let Joe handle things. Him and Nick did a great job handling the site while I was kind of in transition. So yeah, we've moved back out to Phoenix. We lived here for about 7 years. It's actually where my wife and I met. I've got a good group of friends out here, and it was just the right move for us. So that's where I am now. And I'm just waiting on, Eddie. I don't know if he's having some technical problems himself, but that's okay. The joys of live radio. That's what this is all about. And also, as long as we're talking about Phoenix, the Rangers are going to be here on Saturday, January 30th, and I'm going to be in attendance at that game, and we're going to try the live remote thing again, like I did when the Rangers came to South Florida. But I can almost guarantee you that this time it won't get rained out, because that doesn't happen very often here in Phoenix. So that Saturday night game, which will be 8 o'clock, it's an 8 o'clock Eastern time game, it'll be about 6 o'clock here. I'll be at that game in the parking lot. We'll do like a live radio show for you guys that night. And yes, that's why I've always been such a proponent of the Coyotes staying in Phoenix, because it was completely selfish. I get to see the Rangers a couple of times a year when they come, once or twice a season. But the Coyotes have actually been doing well. They've been playing better, and they're starting to draw more fans to the arena. So I think there is a future for hockey here in Phoenix. And let's see. I think we have Eddie back. Hold on. Eddie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, that's weird. You showed up on the switchboard in another place, so we've been having. Well, I've had a few technical glitches while in your absence, but I'm glad you're back. Now I have you. All right, I'm going to hang up on the other line that I have you on here, and hopefully you won't go away.
All right.
So we are good to go.
Yeah, I believe we have John. Whoa. Hello, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep, John Ogrodnik, I'm here. Yep.
Yeah, he hung up on me. He hung up on the wrong line. All right, I'm going to have to call him back. Jeez.
Oh, see, I hung up on the first line that I had you on, and then you came in on the new line. You're still there.
I'm still here, and John Ogrodnik is with me.
Okay, so we're all good then.
We're all good.
All right, and we'll just make sure in the chat room you guys can hear Eddie, correct? Okay, looks like they can hear you. So, good evening, John. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, and good evening to you guys.
You know, I'm sorry for the little shaky start, but, you know, I'm not a good technical guy. And this is why my partner, Jim, and we welcome you to the show, John, he's usually in charge of the technical stuff. You know, as you get a little bit older, this stuff gets a little crazy. But we welcome you to the show, John, and I'm really glad you decided to do the show. And let me just give you a little bit of background about how I contacted John through actual mail, not snail mail, but regular mail, and he was good enough to respond. So I'm really appreciative of you coming on the show and doing this. It's great, John.
Well, you're quite welcome. No, it's not a problem at all. It's not a problem at all, guys.
So I guess I wanted to start off with There was a gentleman, and his name escapes me, who wrote a really great article about you in the hockey news. And a lot of the questions that he asked would be the type of questions that I've asked in the past of former players. And usually I start off with draft day and maybe talking about the days in the Western Hockey League. And I guess we'll start off with, you know, you get drafted. You're drafted by the Detroit Red Wings back in that famous or infamous 1979 draft where, I mean, a chock full of NHL players came out of, played for the New Minster Bruins. And could you tell us, the fans out there, what it felt like and where you were when you first got drafted? I know Jim was going to ask this question. I kind of stole his limelight a little bit, but
no, it's fine. Go ahead.
How it all went down.
Well, yeah. I played junior hockey for the New Westminster Bruins, unfortunately, that was the last time I was on a winner. We won the Memorial Cup, which is the championship of junior hockey. We won it in 1977-1978, and like you had mentioned, in the 79 draft, it had only gone six rounds for some odd reason, and I was fortunate to score 50 goals in major junior as an 18-year-old. Back then, you had to be 19, turning 20 before you could get drafted. And, as a 19-year-old, my junior coach said, I wasn't getting as much ice time. And my junior coach called me over and said, Ernie McLean was his name. He said, John, don't worry about it. He says, you're going the first or second round. He said, I've got something like nine other 19-year-olds I have to get drafted this year. And, being a gullible young hockey player, I believe in it. guys like Brian Krupp and Ray Allison are, racking up 150 points for the Brandon Wheat Kings, and they obviously went high in the draft. But, I was back in my home, at my parents' home back in Edmonton, and I was sitting by the radio listening to the draft, and the first round went by, wasn't picked, and at that time the first round pick for the Red Wings was Mike Foligno.
Right.
Second round went by. I think it was Boris Fistrick. He ended up calling it quits in training camp, never played. I think the third round was Jody Gage. Had a pretty good year with the Rochester Amherst, I think, and career, I should say. And I think he played a little bit in the NHL. And then finally, I was picked in the fourth round, obviously, to Detroit. And, it's a very exciting time in anybody's hockey career to get drafted by an NHL team. And, I came to Detroit, and I just being a fourth-round draft pick, I worked very, very hard in training camp. I was still destined for the minors. They pretty much had their team picked at the start of the season. But I was actually in New York. I was in Adirondack in the Lake George, Glens Falls area. That's where our minor team was. And around January, I got called up because of an injury, and I made the most of it. I got my shot, I made the most of it, and I was fortunate. I worked hard, and things went my way, and, was very happy. I ended up having a 14-year career in the league, but, that is very exciting, when you play junior hockey, and then all of a sudden you get drafted, and just stepping on the ice in the NHL, whether it was a preseason game or my first regular season game, just to step on the ice with some of these guys and play against some of these guys, as a kid, you had their hockey cards and you kind of, idolized them, so to speak.
Right. And I know the answer to this, and I'm sure you know the answer to this. Who was the player taken after you by the Detroit Red Wings in the fifth round?
Got me there I go.
Ah!
Back in 1979, I don't know, who was their fifth-round draft pick?
Joe Patterson, who has been on this show.
Welcome, Joe Patterson.
Yes. I talked to Joe, and I actually asked him a question about you, because I know you had gone in the same draft, and I said, what kind of guy was John O'Grodnik? Because, what he said was, you were a quiet guy off the in the dressing room, and I don't know about off the ice, but in the dressing room you were a quiet guy. Was that just how you are, or on and off the ice, or was that just the way you go about things?
I think that's just the way I went about things. I kind of kept to myself. I wouldn't say I was an introvert, but. I don't know what it is. Maybe I was a little bit. Maybe it's just the personalities, whatever. But, in the dressing room, you always had your you know, you always had your outspoken guys, you know, guys that want to be noticed all the time, you know, perfect example, you know, pretty good guy, had a great career, but, you know, Ty Domi, you know.
Ty.
Ty was a traction, and he'd always be up in the middle of the dressing room all the time, you know, during practice and cracking jokes and, wanted, you know, wanting to be noticed and all that. And that, you know, that was his personality, you know, but,
In those early days in Detroit, who were the guys? And it's funny that you mentioned Mike Foligno, who got taken in that first round. You wound up on a line with him, I guess, playing that first year or so with him. And who went on that early and on that Detroit team was kind of a guy that was you know, a guy like to stand up in the dressing room and be noticed, or a very, you know, kind of a volatile personality, if you will.
You're talking about Mike Foligno.
Anybody on that Detroit team early on in your career?
You know what, it was pretty tough. You know, I mean, the problem with Detroit was, I mean, you know, first of all, you come to Detroit and, you know, I got called up in January of 80. Again, I got drafted in summer 79. And, you know, you're happy to be in the league. You're excited to be in the league. And maybe there was an opportunity there for me because Detroit wasn't a very good hockey club. They struggled for a lot of years. You know, I was very naive about the Detroit situation. I grew up in northern and western Canada on an Air Force base called Cold Lake, which is about 3 hours north of Edmonton, very close to a place called Good Soil, where, you know, famous Ron Greshner was from.
Ronnie Greshner.
And, yeah.
We'll be on this
yeah.
program on the 26th. I'm sorry, I didn't get the plug.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's all right. No, he's from Good Soil and in that area. And you know, I was very naive about the Detroit situation. I didn't realize how weak they were and how the organization was struggling for a lot of years. And but your first year or two, you're just happy to be in the league. And then after that, you know, with losing and stuff like that, it kind of wears on you. So, you know what? We really didn't have, you know, a really vocal guy. Probably the most vocal guy, I would have to say, and even as a rookie, was probably Mike Foligno. You know, he's kind of boisterous. He was loud. He was somewhat of a leader. There's no question about it, you know, because he was always animated. And but after that, you know, our team captain at the time was Dale McCourt. I'm throwing some names
out. Right.
You know, we had a few Europeans, Danny LeBrad and Nedimansky.
Big Ned, Vaclav Nedimansky.
Yeah, you got a great memory. Yeah, Willie Huber was on the team back then. Big Willie Huber, the defenseman, played for the Rangers for a little
bit. Big Willie Huber.
Yeah, so we didn't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of rah-rah when you get up in the NHL. I think there is in junior hockey and stuff like that. So, I mean, everybody pretty much knows what their job is and what they have to do. And, you know, the odd time when somebody would stick up and really get vocal is maybe if you've been on a little bit of a losing streak or whatever, and, you know, you're trying to, you know, shake things up and, you know, get guys going. You know, Danny Gare was our team captain for a year or two. And, you know,
yeah, Danny,
you know,
Gare was a hard-nosed player. He was, you know, wasn't the biggest of guys, but he has nose and everything. And, you know,
he had to say, you know, the guy, I mean, you know, I had a pretty good career before he came to Detroit, and like you said, not a big guy, tough guy, played hard out there. And he respected him when he, you know, when he spoke. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't remember. I mean, you know, people following hockey today, the Red Wings were not a good franchise in the early '80s. I mean, it was the late '70s, early '80s. It was, you know. It was
struggled
the great.
For a lot of years, actually. It actually, you know, I see Ted Lindsay a lot with the alumni bench. Actually, he's going to come up to Muskegon this weekend.
Oh, great.
And obviously he's not skating. I think he's 80 years old now, but he's going to come up. And it's a charity of hockey game in Muskegon, Michigan. And, you know, so I talk to him a lot. And I just joke around. I just, you know, I feel that the whole organization kind of went downhill ever since they traded him from Detroit to Chicago that one year, you know, and, you know, ever since then, Detroit's just kind of struggled under, you know, Bruce Norris and that, and, you know, as far as winning championships and whatever, and it was a struggle for a lot of years, even in the 70s. I mean, they might make the playoffs, but they just, you know, they didn't fare too well at all, and, you know, I'm friends with Al Stelvecchio.
Right.
You know, hunting season, you know, opening day, I think, in November. I'm not even a hunter, but I go up north, and our alumni dentist got some property up there. He's good friends with Alex, and, you know, Alex and I, you know, we talk a lot, and, you know, socialize and whatever, and he's a great guy, and you know, again, being naive about Detroit, but now after being here for so long, it's you appreciate the history of this organization going back.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, you're talking about Ted Glenzy. This guy was, I mean, one of his famous quotes. I mean, you could tell him. I told him. I quoted him. I didn't care if I had to stick you. I had to cut you. Whatever I had to do to get to that puck. I mean, this guy, and as a matter of fact, I was in Detroit over the summer, and I was talking to some of the Red Wing fans out there in the summer. We're talking hockey. And
yes.
I was asking an older gentleman, and I said, who's your favorite Red Wing of all time? He told me Ted Lindsay. So, you know, the fans still, you know, I don't have to say that, you know, it's hockey town, and the fans revere that team, not just with the winning aspect that's happened over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, but the older players, such as Alex DelVecchio and Ted Lindsay. Now, I there's two things I wanted to answer before I let Jim jump in here, because you played with two great goaltenders when you were with Detroit, Rogie Richon and Gilles Gilbert. And I want to go with Gilles Gilbert. Now, I don't know if this happened when you played with him, but didn't Gilles get a weird, like, kind of skin rash? I know this sounds absurd, fans at home.
No, you're right. Yes.
Can you explain this to the fans at home? Because this I find very interesting.
Well, what it is, I think it was kind of prevalent with a lot of hockey players, not just Gilles Gilbert. They call it the gonk. I don't know how they came up with that name or whatever, but yes, it's like a red rash, very itchy, all through the body, you know, on the skin, not all, you know, in most places on the skin. And it basically, you know, they were trying to figure out what it started from, and, you know, they thought maybe it was from the detergent that they washed the underwear with or whatever, but it wasn't just gel. There was other players in the league that had it, and it did affect them. I mean, you know, he was constantly itching all the time, and obviously it would mess up with his concentration when he played Mets, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the prettiest thing to see. You know, I mean, it was almost like, well, it was a red rash with little bumps, you know, all over patches, all over his body and stuff like that. And
wow.
And like I said, nobody could figure it out. But again, it wasn't just Joe. There was a few players in the league that had that, and I think the NHL or some of the physicians or you know, trainers or therapists, you know, were trying to figure out, you know, what would cause it and stuff like that. And
yeah.
He's a funny guy. He's a class guy, Joe. You know, he's French. You know, played very well. You know, unfortunately, I caught him towards the end of his career. Same thing with Rogie Vachon when I got called up. Rogie was towards the end of his career also. You know, I don't know if he just if he played 79-80. I don't know if he played after that or not. I'd have to look at the stats. But
I'm pretty sure you caught him towards the end of the line. But great, not in the Hall of Fame either.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and you know, a big part of the Hall of Fame, too, is, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I think it definitely helps when you're on a Stanley Cup championship.
Yes,
I mean, I think that expedites it big time. And
well, in your case, you could make that case. I mean, you've got Steve Shutt, a left wing, Clark Gillies, a left wing. Your stats are very comparable to those guys. And yet,
oh yeah, you got to be winning. I mean, you know, there's no question about it.
Right.
I look at guys. Well, the other guy that played for the Rangers, I played with him a little bit. Is Mike Gartner. I mean, Mike Gartner was about a perennial 50 goals.
It's fantastic.
You know, and Mike, unfortunately, also never had a chance to play for a championship team. And you know, we had some good teams in New York. You know, we won the President's Trophy the one year, and it's just frustrating. We just never got by the second round, and you know, it's you know, to win a championship, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and you have to have all 20 guys going.
Right.
It just takes one guy to make a mistake or screw up, and all of a sudden the momentum changes. They score a goal, the momentum changes, and you know, it just happens. But you know, I mean, I just remember in the playoffs we were playing Pittsburgh, and you know, I think we lost them in the second round, but we should take them. You know, we had to. I think we're up in the series. I think we even had a 5-on-3. In Pittsburgh, and you know, we didn't finish it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Ron Francis was taking a slap shot from the blue line,
right? Yep.
And beat our goaltender between the legs. And
we haven't forgotten that one. And either of you, which is great, because sometimes as fans we think the players, you know. But I'm finding out as we do these shows that you guys remember. Yeah, you guys are not forgetting any of these things. So.
You know, you get older, you know, you get out of the game and stuff like that. You know, there's certain things you remember. And I think, you know, people always ask me, you know, what's your fondest memory? It's not necessarily scoring 50 goals. It's, you know, it's like you had mentioned, you know, playing junior hockey, getting drafted, stepping on the ice with some of these NHL players, I remember that. You know, the other thing, too, is it comes down to winning a championship. You know, I got traded in January of 87 to go to the Nordiques. You know, I really enjoyed the hockey. I just didn't like living up there. But, you know, we had a damn good team, you know. We had 250 goal scorers, Goulet and myself. We had Dale Hunter and the Stastny brothers. And,
yep.
You know, we beat Hartford the first round. We went into Montreal and won the first two games in Montreal in round two. And we ended up losing in seven. And it's just, you know, things like that you remember because it's frustrating. We had a damn good team, really good team. And, you know, and I remember coming back. I think game three was a little complacent. Got blown out. Game four was a tight game. I remember going down the wing, letting the shot go. And I think it was Patrick Waugh. I'm not mistaken. He might have been a rookie. I got to, you know, check on that. But, you know, tried to beat him low stick side. He made a heck of a save. And I don't know what the time was, 5, 10, 15, whatever the time was later, minutes later. Matt Snaglin goes down the other way and takes a flash shot from outside the blue and beats our goaltender between the legs. And, you know, all of a sudden the series tied, you know, two games apiece, you know. And I know we went into Montreal. One game was tied late in the period, in the third period. I don't know if it was game five or game seven. And, you know, Terry Fraser just allowed the goal. I'm pretty sure it was game seven. And said that we had a guy named McGillies on our team. So then he interfered with the goaltender. And Terry Fraser, you know, just allowed the goal. And we looked on the replay afterwards and stuff like that. And it could have gone either way, you know.
Right.
But, things like that you remember because you always want to play on a championship team. And like I said, I was fortunate to do that in junior hockey too for 2 years, and it's very, very exciting. And it would have been nice to be able to do that in the, you know, in the NHL. When you look at a guy like, you know, Mike Krushelinski, you know, good hockey player, pretty much a third line player, you know, through his career. And you know, guy got 4 or 5 Stanley Cup rings. You know, he's with the
right.
Rangers, he's with the Oilers. You know, it's
right.
Like a, it comes down to timing, you know.
Yeah, it, that goes for former Ranger Rea Ruotsalainen. You know, he hopped onto Edmonton. He wins a couple of cups. And, you know, he's got those rings. Now, I know Jim wanted to talk to you about, and I just wanted to mention, before you get traded to Nordiques, you had a 55-goal, 50-assist season with the Red Wings. 55 goals, folks. This is nothing to, you know, shake your hat at. Well, you know, this is something. I mean, 55 goals.
You know, what was funny is the year I got traded with the Nordiques, the day I got traded, we were actually playing Quebec that night. And here's a funny story for you. We had our morning skate at Joe Louis Arena, and I'm outside the dressing room talking with a retired hockey player who was scouting for the Rangers by the name of Donnie Murdoch. So what was funny was I'm talking to Doc, and, you know, he was telling me whether it was accurate or not, but he was telling me that Phyllis Zito was trying to get me to New York and that Jimmy D was the general manager at the time and said, you know, that I wasn't available. And anyway, we talked for about 15, 20 minutes, and then, you know, out of our dressing room, out of the coach's room came Jacques Demers, who was our coach, and Michel Bergeron, who was our deep coach. And for some odd reason, Bergeron just kept on staring at me, you know, and then we got and I kept on talking, and then all of a sudden I came out of the visitor's dressing room, and Bergeron started staring at me again. And I don't know what happened, because the three guys in the press box that night that got traded from Detroit were Baz and McCray.
Tough guy, tough hombre.
Yeah, Doug Shedden.
Doug Shedden, the center iceman, I believe. Not
and Ray Wing for the Penguins.
Right Wing, okay.
Yes, and then the other guy that was up there was Peter Klima.
Peter Klima.
Yeah,
was we used to call him in my circles Peter Klima.
Yeah.
Peter was a great scoring winger. Ran into some problems later, but was a great talent.
Yeah. So it was funny. You know what? I don't know what transpired there because, like I said, those three guys were up in the press box and we played the Nordiques that night. I got called into. You know, into the coach's room after the game, and they, you know, I ended up going, and Peter Klima ended up staying. So I don't know what transpired there, you know, but anyways, it all worked out well. You know, I look back at 14 seasons, and like I said, I enjoyed the hockey in Quebec, and I really enjoyed New York. New York was we were there for 5 years, and really enjoyed it a lot. Before we get going, what's Joe Patterson doing today?
Joe Patterson lives in Lake George, New York. I have no idea what he actually is doing, but he was a scout for the Panthers for a while,
okay.
Kind of like an advanced scout. He's in good shape. He was in good measure when I talked to him. He was really nice, really amiable, and
he's a very pleasant man. We go back to my wife's in Lake George, New York, so we go back there in the summertime all the time.
I could have been the conduit for a reuniting of Joe Patterson and John O'Grodnik. If this show was good for one thing, that might be it. Jim, are you still with us? We're having a good time.
I'm still here. Yeah, I'm enjoying your conversation.
I've run into Joe a couple times in Lake George, but that was years ago, so I haven't run into him in a few years here, so I didn't know if he was still in Lake George or not.
He was when I interviewed him, he's a very quiet guy nowadays.
He's always been very quiet. Joe's, but the guy could run a 6-minute mile, though, I can tell you that.
It's funny, he said you were quiet, and, you got a great memory, and you're very forthcoming, But I thought Joe was great, too. Joe just told me there were two stories he told me. I guess the one that really sticks out in my mind is Nick Fetiu used to intimidate players. When the opposing teams would come off the bus, Nick Fetiu would be out there sharpening his blade. Like, I'm going to stick you. And that was one of the stories that stuck with me, what Joe said. And I know Jim wanted to talk a little bit about what went on with you in Quebec and then coming home to the Rangers.
Okay. Fire away, Jim.
Well, actually, John, my first question was the year in 84-85 when you had the 105 points, you played on the line with Yzerman and Duguay, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, Eddie, listen to this. John had 105 points. Duguay had his best season, 89 points. And Yzerman was 19 years old with 89 points. How's that for a first line?
Holy cow. Give me those stats again. Give it to me again.
John had 105 points. Duguay had his best season, 89 points, 38 goals, 51 assists. And Yzerman at 19 years old, 30 goals, 59 assists for 89 points.
Wow.
And here's another amazing stat for you. Between the three of them, they missed one game. John missed one game. That, I mean, that is that John. That's incredible. That's unheard of. Those numbers are. What was it like playing with? What was it like playing with Yzerman when he was 19?
Well, you know, playing with Petey when he was 19. A lot of people asked me when he played with him, did you think you would have had a career you had? And, I knew I know Stevie was a skilled hockey player, but you just don't know how they're going to continue to develop. You know, some people peak out and, they don't get any better. And, Stevie came in, he was a franchise player. He was the first or second overall or whatever he was, he was smart. You know, he could move the puck. Yeah, a very smart hockey player out there. One thing that he did that he slowly grew out of was he still tried to do at that point some junior moves. Trying to beat guys one on one by himself, and it didn't really work that well in the show. But again, he was only 19 years old, so he would he developed. He grew out of that, so to speak, and developed more into a well-rounded hockey player as he got older. There's no question about it. But, he was skilled. Duguay could, we all know Ron could skate like the wind. And, I think what was important was we all kind of moved the puck well together. It wasn't a lot of give and goes out there. And, to be successful, you really have to have some sort of a unity or cohesiveness on the line. We were fortunate that, that worked out on that line. And what was frustrating for me was the year before I had 42 goals with about 18 games ago in the season. And I actually broke my wrist in Chicago, I thought I had a good shot at getting 50 that year also. I had the puck at center ice. I passed it off. And when I passed it off, I extended my arms to make the pass. I think it was Troy Murray came over and hit me. It wasn't even a hard hit. Didn't even knock me over or anything. I just kind of looked down and used my glove, and I saw that my, just right above my wrist, the bone would look kind of funny, kind of bulging out a little bit. And I said, this doesn't look good. So that was kind of frustrating. But You know, that was one thing. I mean, our coach back then was Nick Polano, and, you know, I liked Nick a lot because we weren't the strongest team, so he just played the heck, you know, out of the best players that he had. And, you know, we were reasonable. You know, we didn't go that far, but I think we might have made the playoffs a year or two under there and had some decent seasons. But after that year, it dropped off pretty quick. Stevie, in the 85-86 year, Stevie broke his collarbone that year. I think he crashed in the net, if I'm not mistaken, snapped his collarbone, so he was out. Brad Park played for the Rangers. He came in as coach. Brad had, you know, kind of the right idea. You know, he wanted to have two or three sets of power play, two or three sets of penalty killing, and, you know, kind of give everybody their own role, which you can do when you have a team that's got depth. And we were pretty weak, and, you know, the ice time kind of dropped. Let's just say hypothetically from 20 minutes down to 16 minutes. We ended up having the worst season ever, I think, in Red Wing history.
Wow.
And that year, Jimmy D was the coach, or the general manager, I'm sorry. I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but at the trading deadline, gosh, he just cleaned house. He traded Reed Larson, John Baird, Greg Smith.
Right.
Ron Duguay went, Dwight Foster went. They cleaned house about six or seven guys right at the trading deadline, and we just had a god-awful year. Like I said, I was in the book, he was in his collarbone, and
Were you there with Detroit when Harry Neal was behind the bench?
I was there with Harry Neal. Yeah, Harry was a funny guy. Rumor had he didn't want the job, but I tell you what, he was pretty funny, and it's pretty interesting you brought that up because, ironically, we're actually at Madison Square Gardens, and we almost missed warm-up. And I talked to the guys when I was in New York. I talked to Gretsch about this. I said, do you remember when we were in town? He said, yeah. I said, I don't know where you guys were. And what happened was, I guess, Jimmy DeValeno gave Larry the word and said, listen, you got to get these guys going. You got to have a strong meeting with them. And Harry had us in the dressing room there in Madison Square Gardens and just, you know, gave us a strong meeting, so to speak. The last 3 minutes of our warm-up.
Well, I don't want to interrupt your story, but it's funny that we're both on the same page with this because I actually have that game on video. And you guys get shellacked. It's like 10-2. Ed Mio, he left Ed Mio in the net, all 10 goals. Phyllis Pizzito is doing color commentary, and he says, they show a picture of Harry Neal, and he goes, Harry, this team is bad, real bad.
it went downhill. You know, it wasn't good. I mean, you know, like I said, it wasn't good to blast us, you know, before we went out to warm up. And but it was. I mean, what can you do? You know, it's like the old sports psychologist said. You know what? You can only be concerned about things that you're in control of. You know, so you go out there, you do your job, and you do the best you can. And you know, it's to be on a winning team, we all, I think, agree on this. It all starts from the top. It starts right from the owner on down. The owner's got to get the proper general manager. The general manager's got to do the right drafting, get the right people in there. Then he's got to get the right coach. And then it kind of goes all the way, it comes all the way down into place. And
We're finding that out. Fans are finding that out now for sure.
Oh, it does. I mean, you know, you look at Detroit. Detroit never, how long was it when Detroit won the Stanley Cup? And then, you know, all of a sudden, Scotty Bowman comes in with a picture and brings in Gary Smith, the brother of, Dave Smith, who was our medical trainer with the Rangers.
Right, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Scotty comes in, and what do they do? They won in 97. Well, they won four or five Stanley Cups since 97 or something like that, and it just starts from there. You know, they bring in the right people. You know, it was frustrating because when I came back here in 1993, unfortunately, I didn't play that much, which was very frustrating. And what happened there was, doing well in training camp, signed as a free agent after I was done with the Rangers, and everything was going well. And then some reporter wrote a small article in the paper about, why the Red Wings bring an old guy like Ugracic back. Almost similar to what they wrote this year with Bertuzzi, thinking that, basically an older guy taking the younger guy's, ice time.
Right.
Bertuzzi's having a hell of a year this year, but,
yeah.
you know, the insecure Brian Murray, you know, the general manager, you know, he was shaking his boots when he saw the article, and as soon as the article came out, he stopped playing me, and it was very, very frustrating. And
oh, that's terrible.
Point I'm trying to get to, he only played me in 19 games, and he ended up playing me 7 in a row. I ended up scoring like 5 goals in 7 games. Eisenman and I clicked like we did in the 80s. But back then, I was 33, and Gallant was 28, and, you know, the 28-year-old's going to play, and...
Gerard had some good years with, you know, he kind of petered out, too, after, you know, 3 or 4 years, but guy could throw the dukes, a physical player, and...
he played strong, he played hard out there. I liked Gerard a lot, a good guy, you know, I consider him a friend and stuff like that. And I felt bad for him, because that year, you weren't here in Detroit, but every time he touched the puck, the fans kind of booed him a lot. He just struggled towards the end, and... you know, but the point I'm trying to get at is here you had Brian Murray and Doug McLean running the organization. They had a pretty good team. They had Fedorov, Eisenman, Kozlov. We had a good team. Eisenberg, Cicarelli,
right,
and whatever. You know, bing, bang, bomb, they get beat out in the first round against the Leafs. And, you know, all of a sudden Brian Murray's fired, Doug McLean's fired, and whatever. And what the point I'm trying to get at is then comes Scotty, and all of a sudden, you know, he starts putting women together. And,
yeah.
You know, it starts from there. There's no question about it. You know, the, you know, excuse me. Let me just get rid of this. You know, so it just starts from there. And, you know, and I think I'm getting along with one of your guys, but I think what changed a lot of it to where the, you know, the general manager and the owners started accepting having older players, I think, was when the Rangers won the Cup in 94. Mike Keenan brought in a bunch of 30-year-olds. You had, what, Larmer, Anderson, McTavish,
right,
Kevin Lowe, Messier. And I think you guys know as well as I do, when a team wins the Stanley Cup, all the other teams try to emulate, you know, the team that won the Stanley Cup. And I think back then, that kind of made it vogue to have older players.
Right.
And I know I talked to Kenny Holland a lot here in Detroit, and, he loves his older players. He likes them, you know, he likes them older, you know.
Right. Well, you know, what's happened with the Rangers is that we, as fans and as a franchise, and now with the salary cap, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of it's back to where I think the older players get shortchanged now because they do demand a little bit more of a salary because of their years in the league. They don't get played. They're replaced in lieu of the, you know, the younger, cheaper guys. And,
I just see guys here, you know, like Drapes or whomever. You know, I just see guys at 33, 34 years old. They're signing 3-year deals, you know. And, you know, back in the early 90s, you know, that was just taboo. You know, there was not too many guys that, unless you were like, you know, a Mark Cowell, you know, an unbelievable defenseman, that you would play longer. But, you know, most of the guys, like I said, and that's all I'm saying is you're seeing guys. I see some of the salaries and, you know, the way they're signing guys now. So, and there's guys, well, another example is a guy like Shanahan. What do you play there? You just retired. What do you play, for 40 or something like that?
Right, yep. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're, I guess what I'm saying, guys, is if you're a half-assed player, there's no reason why you can't play to your 30 or 39, 40 years old if you're half-assed. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yep. Now, you know, we've gone the gambit so far. We've talked a lot about Detroit. Let's talk about the Rangers, your tenure with the Rangers. You played on a line with Brian Mullen and Kelly Kissio. And I want to get your take. Kelly Kissio was the captain back then. What kind of captain was Kelly?
Well, again, Kelly, you know, we're going to go back to the same word. I mean, Kelly was pretty quiet. You know, he didn't say much, but he led by example on the ice. And, you know, he's a hard-working guy. I really enjoyed playing on the same line with him along with Brian because we all moved the puck very well. But a lot of respect for Kelly. You know, he ironically, he was in training camp with me in Detroit one in, I think, the first or second year or something like that back in New Year. He won. And I think he ended up going to Europe to play, if I'm not mistaken. But he battled his way back in the league, and he had a very, very successful career. But first-class guy, we just ran into him up in Calgary a couple of years ago. He was running the Calgary Hitmen Junior
Championship.
Yeah. He is, you know, we did the 4-on-4 tournament up there, and that's where I ran into him. And his wife and my wife, you know, talk frequently throughout the year and stuff, keep in touch and stuff like that. But Kelly, first class guy, very, very good team captain.
Okay.
John, when you got traded.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, John, Jim, go ahead.
Oh, go right ahead, Jonathan.
Are you sure?
No, no, you're here. Nope. Jim, fire away, Jimmy.
Okay. John, when you got traded from Quebec to the Rangers, Michel Bergeron was your coach in Quebec, and then he was your coach when you got to the Rangers. Give us a little insight on playing for Michel Bergeron. What was he like as a coach?
You know, he was a very, very boisterous coach, I guess you could say. Very, very loud. very emotional, French. A lot of yapping behind the bench and stuff like that. But, you know, I like Michel. You know, like I said, I mean, it's frustrating because I thought we should have done better in Quebec. And I felt bad, guys. I'll be honest with you. I did not. My first couple of years in New York, I played god-awful. You know, the Nordiques had asked to get traded. They said they'd trade me in the summertime. I sat there and, excuse me, actually, I was in Lake George the whole summer. Our house in Detroit was being rented out, and I was waiting to get traded. Never traded me. I didn't show up to training camp. Finally, I didn't skate all summer. Finally, they finally, traded me midway through training camp to the Rangers. And mentally, I was just all messed up. I had no confidence whatsoever, and I was fighting it. I like Phil Esposito a lot, but between Phil and Bergeron, both these guys, very emotional people, not overly patient. I got deeper and deeper in the hole, and I felt bad. You know what, they traded for me, and the 2 years I was there, I did not play well under those two guys. I really felt bad about that situation. And, the game is mental, and I was just fighting it. And but Michel was entertaining, you know.
Well, elaborate. How was Michel entertaining? I want a good Michel. It's not like Michel Bergeron's going to come on the show, you know.
He did a lot of yelling and screaming behind the bench at the referees on the ice. I didn't understand half the stuff he said because he was French. He was very loud. I mean, he just did a lot of screaming, yelling, or whatever. He kind of gave that, that sly look out of the corner of his eye. He was kind of always had that stern look about him, but whatever. I mean, he just didn't say much. Again, with the language barrier and stuff like that. I mean, he's just English.
But
the thing is, guys, when it comes to coaching, for the most part, it's not so much what they say. It's how they handle the bench and how they play the players and stuff like that. And, I'll tell you, when I was in Quebec, and with the Rangers, and let's just go back to Quebec, I enjoyed playing for the guy. You know, I was pretty much third line. I mean, we had the Stashing Brothers. We had Goulet and Hunter on another line. There I had myself, Jason Lafreniere, and Wayne Lambert on the third line. And we had three very, very good lines. But,
right. And
it was easier, even though I had less ice time, it was easier scoring goals when you were playing on a better team versus those years in Detroit. You know, less ice time, but I was still able to, I think Goulet and I both had 9 goals in 13 games in the playoffs that year. But I just liked the way Michel used the bench, I got enough ice time. I played the power play. I have no complaints, and that's what it is. You know, it's how they use the bench. How they play and stuff like that. You know, guys you get frustrated with, when I came back to Detroit under Brian Murray. You know, if you're on a team and scoring in preseason, the guy doesn't dress you, he plays you in 19 games, pretty much all because of this one stupid article and whatever, you know. It's
right.
But Michel was good. You know, I don't have much stories. I know he's ran away. He's very loud, in basketball, he probably would have been kicked out of the game, every game he was involved with, the way he yelled at the rest of that, but very animated, animated individual, and like I said, I do feel bad because they went out of their way to trade me to get me to New York, and I basically sucked those first 2 years, I was there.
Yeah, well, I don't think you have to. I mean, things happen, and then you wind up scoring 40 goals, and the thing, at the time as a fan, you're watching this all transpire and unfold. You got Phil Esposito, first of all, one of the most impetuous guys probably in the history of general managing. There were guys going in and out of that team every week, which was great for us fans because they're like, hey, we got a new guy. Hey, maybe. We were all excited. I had a new guy to look up for, look in the paper and then the hockey news, see what the guy was all about.
And hey, we've got Wolf Paymont. We've got Brian McClellan.
Right, you know, we've got, we would get like these, you know, Jeff Brubeck is here, yay, Pat Price is here, yay, you know.
You're going back, yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was like every week, you know. And
and I like Phil. I mean, you know what? When
I like Phil,
when,
too.
Another emotional guy, you know. You get a Frenchman and an Italian, both these guys are...
That's what I was going to say. You got like... It's like a Fellini film, kind of like it's a circus, really. Put those guys together, and I think we had a Ranger beat writer who said that one time Phil traded somebody over bad Chinese food. He got bad Chinese food, and he was arguing with the guy. He goes, "You know what? That guy does stink. I'm trading him." And, you know, so I mean.
I remember we played a preseason game when I was with the Rangers. We played a preseason game against the Vancouver Canucks, and I think we played it in Phoenix. And I mean, we had a half-assed team dressed for that preseason game, but God, we lost, and Phil was just steaming outside the dressing room, walking up and down the aisle, just upset. So we lost, and I'm like, it's a preseason game. And first of all, we didn't have a pretty good team dressed, and I'm like, holy cow, and you know, so that didn't help with my situation, you know, but that's no excuse, like I said. I mean, it's, you know, hockey's any type of sport's funny, you know. I still use the analogy, I tell young hockey players this too. You know, my junior coach, Ernie McLean, told me once, he said, listen, he says, you can take a 2x4, you put it on the ground, you walk across it, no problem. You take that same 2x4, you put it 100 feet in the air and try to walk across it, you know. It's just, it's mental, because sports is mental. And once you lose it, you know, it's a battle getting it back. And that's why, you know what, one of my best coaches also was Roger Nielsen. I really enjoyed playing under Roger. He was a smart man. He wasn't a lunatic behind the bench. He just wouldn't yell and scream at people for the sake of yelling and screaming. He understood the game. He knew he made mistakes. And, you know, he took over and, you know, basically gave me 10 games. He said, here's 10 games. We'll see what you can do, and we'll give you a shot. So I don't know what it was. Kissio, Mullen, and myself, we hit it off very good, and I started scoring some goals in preseason, and it continued on in the regular season. I think that's what you guys did. I ended up having a 40-goal year.
Right.
But just, I respect him as a coach, very intelligent coach. Liked him. We had our differences my last year. Who knows what happened, but it gave me the shot, gave me the 10 games, and it worked out. And it also helps out, too, that, again, you got a line that's, you know, got some, you know, unity or cohesiveness, you know, where we all kind of gel together. And Brian and Mullen and Kelly Kissel and myself, we moved the puck very quickly. You know, there was nobody really held on the puck too long. We gave and go, cycled down low, a lot of quick puck movement. And it worked out very, very well, you know, and... you know, one thing I couldn't understand about Roger, and I kind of joke about it now, is for some odd reason when we got Bernie Nichols and we made the trade for Bernie Nichols, he thought, you know what, I've got to put my best left winger, my best center, iceman, and my best right winger together. Well, it just didn't work. Our line sucked for about 10 games. It was myself on the left side, Bernie Nichols at center ice, and Darren Turcotte on the right side.
Wow, wait a minute. We have our first full line. We've had all those players on this show.
Yeah.
Fingers the line stunk. Speaks volumes about this show.
Where's Bernie Nichols living these days?
Oh, that's a long story, my friend. He's in Texas now, I believe. He is working on a new business venture that I don't know if I could talk about. But, yeah, Bernie's doing well. He's, you know, he's golfing it, you know, as usual. That was his big thing. And Bernie's doing good, and everything's good with him. And
what about Turcotte? Where's Darren Turcotte living these days?
He's in Ontario now, somewhere in Ontario.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Darren.
Anyways, Roger put that line together, and he, like, you know, broke up Mullen and Kissio and myself. And, you know, it didn't take long, but... you know, I'll tell you another story, guys, with the Rangers. This really frosted me. The next year, we won the President's Trophy the 1 year. The next year, we're on the verge of winning the President's Trophy again. And right at the trading deadline, oh, man, what happened that season was, I don't know if you remember this or not, but Kelly Kitchell had busted up ribs or something like that most of the season. He's constantly in and out of the lineup. So what they did was, and I really like this hockey player as a center ice, when they put, if you remember this name, Kevin Miller.
Wait a minute. We've had
another one
on this show.
Miller and Brian Mull and myself, we had a great line, and Kevin would center us. And that's when I dropped to 30 goals. What happened was Kevin would center us and, played well. The line played well. I'd score, whatever, let's say seven goals in like 12 games. And all of a sudden, Roger, would think that Kelly was, Kitsio was healthy. Throw him back in the lineup. He was struggling out there. We'd kind of go in a slump and end up, pulling him out of the lineup again after, X amount of games. They took Kevin back with us. We'd start taking off again, and, start scoring 7 goals in like 12 games or whatever, all this stuff. And then what frustrated me was Kelly wasn't even 100%. And at the trading deadline, they traded Kevin Miller to Detroit for Joey Kosher.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Joey's fault. But you know what? Kelly wasn't 100%. Broke up a great line. I don't know if you remember, but I don't think we won one game the final 10 games of the season. We got beat out in the first round over one stupid trade. I was so upset over that trade. Our first line was...
I'm sure you didn't tell Joey about that.
Oh, no, Joey knows this. I mean, it had nothing to do with Joey. I mean, it wasn't Joey's fault. I mean, the fault was is, you had a great second line. Of our first line was Bernie, and maybe Mike Gardner. I don't know who was on his line, but you had a great second line of Miller, Mullen, and myself. Great line, and the team was doing great. We're on the verge of winning another freaking President's Trophy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And to just trade the guy when Kelly wasn't even ready, he was still beat up. He just had a beat up season, and. And it wasn't Kelly's fault. He was injured, and it wasn't Joey's fault. He was involved in the trade. They just broke up a line. And if you look at the stats, I'm almost pretty sure that's what happened. We ended up not winning one game. We forfeited the President's Trophy and got bumped out. And I was like, what a...
That would have been an interesting thing to bring up with Kevin. Had I known that.
Yeah,
now,
Kevin's right over here in Lansing. So
right, yeah.
He plays with their alumni once in a while, and actually he's going to be up in Muskegon on Saturday playing in that charity hockey game up there. So
listen
to it, but I was on your show.
Yeah, tell him you will also. I was looking up some stats just here on the show. I believe that you are now the fifth guy we've had from that, I think, 89-90 team. No, the 88-89 team. You're our fifth guest from the 88-89 team. Which shows you we're really living in the moment on this show.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think Kevin Miller in that, Kevin Miller was more like 92 or 90-91 or something like that.
Okay.
Because I got traded to, and I'll tell you how this happened. The last year in New York that I was there, Kelly Kitsio and Brian Mullen went to San Jose. And Kelly won the expansion draft. They left him unprotected, if I'm not mistaken. And then I think they gave up Brian Mulley for Tim Kerr. Remember Tim Kerr?
Yeah, power play specialist for the Philadelphia Flyers. He had
a lot of knee problems. He was pretty beat up when he came to New York.
You said beat up. I'll use the word finished, but you could use the word beat up.
Yeah, but anyway, what happened was, so my two linemates left, and... went to San Jose. So that year we had Messier. I forget who the second line was, but the third line, I was on the third line that year with a rookie by the name of Doug Waite.
Ah.
I was still playing, and I think he's with the Islanders, but he's had a great career. And Waiter and I were sitting on the bench, and we were getting, 8 minutes of ice time and, playing third line and whatever. And Roger Nielsen came up to me and said, John, he said, listen, he says, I got to get you going. You're my best left winger. I've got to get you going here. And so he throws me up there with Messier. So playing with Mark, you're getting 20 minutes of ice time or whatever. So the game was easy. And I can't remember. I think I had like 8 or 9 goals in 12 games or whatever. The game was easy. because, you know, if I had the ice time and slow motion out there, the game's tough for me if you're getting, you know, three shifts or two shifts a period.
Right.
So Roger comes up to me and says, Johnny, well, we got you going, and boom, I'm back to third line getting 8 minutes of ice time. And I'm like, okay. So towards the second half of the season, you know, hardly playing, getting a little ice time, so all of a sudden, boom, that's, you know, you know, I'm in the press box. I'm not even dressing. So, you know, which is kind of very frustrating. And then I guess what really upset me was Minnesota, Brian Propp had blown his shoulder out, and Minnesota had offered a fourth-round draft pick for me. So I give Neil Smith credit. He was the general manager at the time. The guy, I had a lot of respect for him. He came up to me and said, Johnny, he said, listen. He said, I can't trade you. I can't let you go for a fourth-round draft pick. I was 32 at the time, so that was considered old back then. And that's all the offer was, a fourth-rounder. He said, I can't let you go for a fourth-rounder. He said, because if an SA or somebody goes down, I've got to move you up to the first, you know, first or second line again. He said, if I give you away for nothing, he said, I could lose my job. You know? And so I respect him for that. So what's frustrating is they don't trade you, and they don't play you. It's just,
right, yeah, you were caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, he couldn't trade you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, you know. But at least he explained it to me, but I was, you know what, I wasn't dressed the last game at the Gardens before the training deadline, and I noticed my equipment wasn't in my locker. We had two sets of gear, one for the Gardens, one for where I play on at the time, and so I was sure I was gone. I was all prepared to go. I sat around where I play line until the training deadline was over with, and then I never got traded. And that's when Neil Smith had told me what had happened. And quite honest, guys, I, you know, I wish I would have got traded, because there's nothing worse than sitting up in a press box.
Oh, yeah, that's
right,
terrible.
Drift, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's how it all ended, and it was kind of frustrating in New York. And, you know, it's like John Van Beesbrick, who lives here in Michigan, so, you know, it's kind of funny. It's, you know, you end up scoring 70-some goals in two seasons, and all of a sudden a year or so later, you're out of the game. And it happened that quickly. You know,
yeah. It was. It was
Detroit, and Brian Murray not traded me, and you know, I heard rumors whether it was accurate or not. When I was back in Detroit in 1993, when he already played me, I heard that Calgary was hurting on their power play, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but you know, I was told that they offered future considerations, and the same thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, we don't trade you. We don't play you. You sit around. You don't do anything. And it was just tough back then, because at 32, 33, like you said, they let you cross over 30 back then. They slowly started to put you up the pasture.
It's funny because, you know, I looked at the stats, you know, before I did the show, and I'm saying, I don't remember John having injury problems, because usually that spells the end. We've had another former teammate of yours, Carrie Wilson, on the show.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and Carrie's fantastic. His son Colin's playing for the Predators now. Yeah, Colin is his son, and Kurt, he was chosen in the first round this year. And
okay, is he back in junior right now, No,
I don't think so. I don't think
so. He played the Predators, is that what he said?
Yeah, he was playing with the Predators. He got injured. And I don't think he was went back to junior. I haven't got an update on that. But Carey's career ended with, you know, the knee injuries. And yours, you got caught like in a really odd situation where you still had some jam, so to speak, to play the game. But it was just some. But now it's all hunky dory for Johnny O. Now he's a big time financier, wheeling and dealing on Wall Street. I called a guy. He's like, Eddie, I got to go. It's closing bell time. You know, I'm wheeling and dealing here. But,
well, you know, it's interesting you said that, because a lot of people ask if you missed the game. And, you know, I'm a fan now. You know what? I don't watch, you know, I don't watch any hockey at all right now, except for the Red Wings. And actually, they're going to be on tonight at 10 o'clock. I think they're in Anaheim.
Oh, okay.
Like that, so I'll watch them tonight. I don't watch any other hockey. I know a lot of players on the Red Wing team right now. I talk to some of these kids and stuff like that. So I enjoy watching these guys.
I want to ask you about a Red Wing player that's an enigma. And the only reason I asked this, and I wanted to mention this, this ties into it. I wanted to mention a guy, you know, this guy Greg, who was nice enough. This guy Greg is from Beckett.com. He's a moderator over there. And they deal with hockey cards and the whole hockey card thing there. And Greg was been great to me over there. But this kind of ties in. There's a guy on the Detroit Red Wings that was very highly touted coming to this season. And he's doing what we Italians say, un gats, which means nothing. Billy Leano, what is going on with this guy? John, I need your expert advice. By yourself.
It's just humorous because you and I are on the same page here, dude.
We are.
You know what? He's probably a nice guy. It's nothing personal. He's not a kid. He's 26 years old.
I got to preface this first. I know where you're going with this, but I got to preface this. His rookie card is going for $20. I want to know, John, after you give me a summation, buy or sell?
he's been disappointing, you know what? And like I said, it's nothing personal, you know what? It's just strictly business. Detroit has been hammered with injuries. I mean, Franz and Zetterberg, you name it. I mean, Cromwell. I mean, Mike Babcock is looking and needs scoring, okay? And anybody that has, does something pretty good out there, Babs will sit there and play the heck out of them. And Foligno has every opportunity in the world right now. And he's had every opportunity.
You're moving up to the first line, right?
Well, you know what? He's
not responding. That's what you're telling me. You're telling me, sell, sell, sell. If we were on the market floor, would I be yelling, sell, 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 sell?
Well, you know what? Leno he's got to score some goals. Okay, I mean, if you're a fighter, you're a fighter. If you're a hitter, you're a hitter. You know what? If you're a checker, you're a checker. Okay, Leno can pass the puck all right. He can shoot the puck all right. He just does everything good. I don't see anything great at this point. Okay, and if he's going to do something, we've got enough playmakers. We got that too. We got Zetterberg. We got guys that can move the puck. Okay. And he's not going to beat any of those guys out. So what's your next job? You got to be a goal scorer. And I just think, and just let me finish here. To me, it seems like he's not the strongest player out there.
Mm-hmm.
I like how you're trying to be diplomatic about this.
Just don't worry. I just can't.
What I'm saying is I notice players when they do something that stands out.
Right.
Okay.
There's no flash of brilliance.
Yeah, I don't see anything standing out with him. Now I look at this Abdicator that he got out of junior, okay, or out of college. A young kid, he's got a lot of ice time because of the injuries. I mean, I'm seeing sparks there. I see a nice move once in a while by this kid. I see him hitting guys and knocking guys on their ass. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
Well, look at Thomas Holmstrom. I love the guy. Okay, the guy can skate. He can shoot. Can handle the puck. But he's damn good in front of the net. So that's the point I'm trying to make, is he's doing something that stands out. Leno, again, he's probably a nice guy, but you've got to do
right.
something that stands out if you're going to score.
The Rangers at present have about 14 of those guys.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. I don't know if you remember this guy, Jody Hull. I played with Jody Hull.
Oh, Jody Hull. Oh, I love Jody Hull. Jody Hull has got to step it up on the power play. I'm like, Jody Hull, he's not even a power play guy. I remember Roger Nielsen said that about him. He was a pretty expensive player. But go ahead with your story.
So, anyways, I was going to say about Jody once. I liked playing him. He was my right winger, I think, maybe when I was playing the third line with Doug Wade. And I love playing with the guy. The guy could move the puck, very heads up. You know, and I like guys that could move the puck, you know, because I like to give and go out there, get it back, give it, you know, whatever. Love playing with the guy. Unfortunately, with Jody, he was good in a lot of areas. He just wasn't great in a lot
right.
of areas, you know. And, you know, another example here, we got a kid, Drew Miller, Kevin Miller's cousin or whatever.
Man, the Millers, they have everybody.
Well, there's a boatload of them, yeah, I know, but... You know, same thing. You know what? The guy has done a few things that have stood out. He scored a couple nice goals. He's doing something that kind of stands out. And I don't know if he's going to stay here once we get healthy, but I see more out of him. The thing is, when he scored that one goal, I think it was in Nashville, then Mike Babcock played the heck out of him the rest of the game. He actually moved him up to the, you know, to the first or second line, you know. And then, and like I said, that's why I like Babcock as a coach, because when he sees somebody going, he recognizes that and he plays the heck out of that player.
Right. Well, that's a good point. You know,
actually, it's funny you said that about Lino, because I said the same thing. I talked to my, you know what, and, you know, I have some, and then finally, unfortunately, Mike Babcock had to sit him out a few games to try and get him going and whatever, and I wish the guy well.
I don't wish him well against the Rangers, but against the Western Conference, he can do whatever he wants.
And let me ask you this question with the Rangers. How's the ice at Madison Square Garden? Is it still,
it's a little bit better. A little bit better. I mean, I haven't been skating on it, but from what I hear, telltale, with the technology, and I guess when you played there, it was less than accommodating.
Well, it sometimes it's like playing with a tennis ball out there, you know. I think we got heck. I think James Patrick might have got heck from ownership or whatever, because I think he publicly made a comment on how bad the ice was.
Yes.
The papers.
Oh.
I guess management came down. I don't know. You can't be saying something like that. If I'm not mistaken, I remember that.
You know.
So who's running the Rangers now? You got Messier as the president. I see Schoenfeld up there.
Well, Schoenfeld's down with Hartford Wolfpack.
Running the Rangers.
Nobody's running the Rangers. It's a guy behind a curtain. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. That's what we got going here, John. It's, you know, it's a...
Oh, boy.
I don't mean that as an insult. I apologize.
It's pretty close. To summarize this, and then I'll let Jim do his take.
Hold on one second. How do you pronounce his name?
Tortorella. Like mozzarella,
Tortorella. I apologize. Tortorella. I apologize.
No problem. Don't worry. Torts is not listening to this show, because if he did, we'd get the letters. But the thing is, Tortorella came in with all this, he's going to revamp the Rangers' way of thinking. Tom Rennie was a more defensive-minded coach, a player's coach. And Tortorella was going to come in here with his quote was, a safe is death policy, which means the defensemen are going to pinch in, they're going to take chances. Everybody is going to, you know, a heavy forecheck. It's going to be, you know. And
right.
The Rangers aren't equipped with the players that they have to execute it. And it worked for about eight games. We were all ecstatic, and then it just ran itself into the ground. And now we're back to, let's go back to the Rennie style, and let's just try to win games 2-1. And they lose.
Are the Rangers not, you see the Rangers aren't that skilled?
No. They have one. I'll just sum it up in one thing. One thing I want to Marian Gaborik, who's their only skilled player, has 25% of their goals. He's leading
the
league.
That's right. So, you know, I give management credit because I think they dumped a big salary to get him. Who's the guy that went to Montreal?
Scott Gomez. Scott Gomez's salary they got.
Yeah.
So,
but that was a true deal. That was a good deal by the Rangers.
Yeah. That's why I was saying, you know, Bob Gainey, the only guy that could be bamboozled by Glenn Sather at this point. Glenn, hey. He was a great guy in his day, but his day is past. John, John, I could talk to you all night, but I have another guest waiting. I've kept him on, you know, too long already.
I
feel like he's gonna come to my house and beat me up if I don't put him on. But John,
you put him on. Listen, guys, you want to do this again? You got my phone number. Call me anytime.
Oh, I would love to talk again, Jim. He was great. I mean, fantastic. He's the most talkative guest in the history of this show in the 10 years we've been running. Wait a minute. The internet hasn't been around 10 years. Great.
No, call me anytime. You want to do this again? You want to shoot the breach for half an hour? So I'd be more than happy to do it. Call me anytime. You got my number, Jimmy. You know how to get hold of me.
All right. Johnny O, take care, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Okay, listen.
Thanks, John.
Good luck out there. And who knows? Maybe we'll catch base if we end up going up to New York one of these days.
Just
run into you in Lake George.
Yeah. Lake George.
Okay, guys.
Joe. Take care, John.
Take care, John.
Guys.
Good night. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Good night. Wow.
All right. So there you have it. The great John Ogrodnik. Wow. For a guy you were worried about not being talkative.
Holy cow. I talked to the guy on the phone. It's one-word answers, blah, blah, blah. Emails, just three words. You get him on the phone, and it was great. I wish we had a more topic. What a memory on that guy.
He likes a big audience, I guess.
Well, yeah. Hey, I got to tell you, some of these people in the chat room are in my Chateau Bow Wow. Jackie's off on Facebook rather than listening to this show. You know, how bad was she playing Farmville with Darren Turcotte? All right. Do the Mitch Beck thing and let's get this show. I want to talk to this Devin D of DDO Meaty. I always butcher it.
The Howlings.net Wolfpack Report on Blue Shirt Banner Radio is brought to you by Crossroads Consulting. If you're looking for a full-time permanent position, and frankly, who isn't these days, and could use a laugh or two while you're at it, then send your resume to www.crossroadsconsulting.com. If you're hiring full-time personnel, then call 203-459-9969, extension 100. At Crossroads Consulting, we're putting the human back into human resources.
And now, without further ado, here he is to put the human back into this radio show. Mitch, thanks for holding me.
we apologize. I'm hanging by my neck.
I'm telling you, I'm so sorry about that.
We didn't ask O'Grodnik what he likes on his hot dogs.
Hold on, wait. We'll get him back on the line. Hold on, Mitch.
Yeah, hold on.
I have nothing against O'Grodnik. I think the guy was a great player and everything else, but you got a future superstar, you know, for the New York Rangers sitting here on hold.
Listen, I'm ready to bring him in. Johnny just didn't give us the time. Johnny was all open. I didn't think we would go four minutes with him.
I like O'Grodnik. Don't get me wrong. I know the people in the chat room are probably going to rip my head off, but I'm telling you, I like Johnny a lot.
He's a good guest.
But who we have on the phone this week is a terrific guest. Not only is he a terrific person, but I'm telling you, I absolutely love watching him play. Every single time he gets on the ice, when G gives him a shift, something's going to happen, and it's usually, you know, somebody's going to get it in their kitchen, and either that or they're going to get a foot in their eyeball.
Mitch, you sound like a wrestling promoter.
I am a wrestling promoter. As a matter of fact, I'm taking this act on the road.
Steve Oakland.
Yeah, but there is nobody. He's from Stratford, Ontario. He is a really, really underrated hockey player. When he was in the minors, he's in the minors now. When he was in juniors, the guy could put it in the net. He had 23 goals 1 year, 21 another. Did everything that's been asked of him. He does all the dirty work. I've said it, you know, on Howlings many, many times. He's a poor man, Sean Avery, and I'm really glad we were able to bring him on this week. His name is Devin Didiamiti. Morning, Devin, or good evening, Devin. It might be morning based upon that interview.
How's it going, guys?
How's it going, Devin? Welcome to the show, Jim.
Devin, welcome to the program. Sorry to keep you holding. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Got some extra time to talk to Mitch.
Oh,
well, that's always
really
fun.
Sorry.
You're going to have to send him a check now.
Yeah. Now you really have our apologies and condolences. Now, anyway, moving on. You know, Devin, I did some research on you, and I got to tell you, and like Mitch said, you were scoring it, playing for Sudbury. You had the scoring touch, and I guess my first question right out of the gate is, what's been the biggest adjustment as far as the skill level goes from juniors to the AHL? Because I know you've had a little bit of trouble of getting on the score sheet. What's the biggest difference? And I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but the fans at home and the people in the chat room would love to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest difference is speed. Not so much skating, but when you get the puck, you don't have as much time to make plays as you would in junior. And, you know, in junior I was a first or second line guy, and here I'm, you know, a fourth line guy that's getting limited minutes every night, so it's really tough to get on the score sheet. But, I mean, I'm going to, you know, do whatever I can to stay in the lineup every night and, you know, try and help my team any way I can. And, you know, right now that you know, using my fist a little more than I need to, and, you know, hopefully I can use my hands to score in the second half of the season here.
Yeah, well, I got to say, I mean, I was looking at those stats, and I noticed that you played a lot with Mark Stahl, I think all 3 years, 3 out of 4 years in junior. And what kind of guy is Mark? You know, I just kind of need a feel. He's a hard read. You played Adam with at a young age. Let's face it, Mark's still young, but so are both of you guys. But how was Mark playing there with Mark?
Mark was awesome. I mean, my first year in the league was his second year, and he was a leader on and off the ice. He taught me a lot. You know, obviously he's one of the premier players in the league, so it's a guy you want to look up to. That 1 year in Sudbury, we made a pretty big push into the playoffs and lost in the finals to Plymouth, and you know, he's a pretty big contributor to our team. He's really easy to get along with, and you know, a pretty good guy. And he's a little goofy at times, but when it comes down to things, he's pretty serious.
I like that. Well, you know, from what I hear, what Mitch tells me, you and Dale are the goofy guys over there in Hartford, keeping things loose, keeping things, you know, keeping everybody happy there on the bench.
Someone's got to do it, right?
Right.
Devin, I'd like to bring up the last game against Syracuse, because it's an important thing to note, because a lot of the people that are listening or watching, you know, don't know, because they don't see you that often, you know, how important of a role you actually play in the team. On Howlings, I wrote up about the fact that I really thought you turned that game around. An instigator, agitator, whatever the correct word is, lot of the times the team is dead or playing flat, and they look to you just as they look to Sean Avery, the Rangers do, to pull them out of it. And in this case, you really did. And was about, I think it was 41 seconds, if I'm not mistaken, after you ignited the room, you know, the Wolfpack got on the board after trailing for most of the game. Do you feel that present, you know, that situation when you're sitting on the bench of, oh, I need to do something to wake these guys up?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not going to dazzle anyone with, you know, superstar moves or anything, but anytime we get on the ice, I'm going to try to be the hardest working guy out there. And I mean, I'm going to put my body on the line every shift. And, you know, if I have to go out and get in a fight to scrap the boys up, or, you know, if I have to go run someone over and then have to fight as a result of it, I'm willing to do that. Another way to get the boys going sometime is just get under the other team's star player, and, you know, that riles the boys up a little bit, and, you know, tends to get everyone in the game a little bit of chirping, you know, just get up going and get some of the guys' emotions out of them, you know what I mean?
Do you have a favorite line?
Yeah, but I don't think I can say it on the radio show right now.
I mean, it's internet radio. Go ahead. Just, you know, replace the expletive with something else or whatever. You can say anything you want on this show. The FCC turns the other cheek when it comes to us.
Yeah,
use the expletive.
I don't think I could say anything I say on the ice.
And Dad is listening after all.
Oh, okay. All right.
But
you know,
when you feel that the team is down, does, you know, as a guy who hasn't played the game myself, does G ever come up to you and say, you know, we need you to get there and shake things up a bit?
Yeah, he's never ever told me to fight, but, you know, the odd time, you know, before I go for a shift, they'll say, come on, Dibs, we need you to give us a little spark here. And, you know, and normally that means, you know, go run around and lay some bodies out and kind of do my thing. And you know, I'm more than willing to do that for the team as long as it's going to help us and we're going to feed off that energy.
Well, it certainly worked against Syracuse. Like I said, you got the goal for you guys got a goal 41 seconds later. And what a lot of people that haven't seen you play, even in that game, you were moving, you were using the hands in addition to knocking guys on their ass. You know, you were using the hands, making good passes, and making some good plays, and that's why you got to get bumped up to the third line, which I think is really where you belong.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think I'm a fourth line player. I can combine my toughness with skill, and I think here if I get a chance on the third line, I can show some people that I do have a little bit of skill, and maybe I'll start hitting the score sheet more often.
And you got a big game tomorrow night against the team, the Lowell Devils, and this will be the first of two games that you actually get to play in the Rock. And that should be kind of an interesting experience, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I never played in New Jersey's rink, and hopefully it's pretty fun game, and hopefully we can have a big crowd out there and can put a show on for the crowd.
Yeah, Lowell, just in case people don't know that's listening, up there in Lowell, Massachusetts, and they get like about 2,000 fans a game if they're lucky.
Yeah, not even. It's like going to the public library and playing a hockey game.
I love him already. Sign Kevin DiCamini up. Let's get this kid in here. He talks junk. He gets things going. Bring him up to the big club. I'm calling Glenn right now.
Devin, just so you know, a New Jersey Devils crowd ain't much better than that. So, and in case the team didn't warn you, that ain't the best neighborhood that arena's in either. You might want to wear your helmet at all times.
As a matter of fact, Ricky O is going to be there. He's from the chat room. He says going to be. He says in the chat room, tell Devin I will be the guy screaming for him to fight LeBlanc. That's what he said.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you see Ricky O, he's got tats on his arms, all kinds of Ranger tats, all kinds. He's crazy. Guys,
that's LeBlanc.
If you square off in a game with the Devils, who are some of the guys that you usually will find?
Last game we played Lowell, I fought Louis Robitaille. And last year I fought Matthew Crente. Time, so I think it's up in New Jersey right now, actually.
Yeah. No,
it's a pretty tough kick.
You know, and what's interesting, they're a team that's playing exceptionally well right now, and while the Pack are still trying to get that consistency to stay well, when they're good, they're really, really good, the Pack are, and when you guys are having a bad game, it's brutal.
Yeah, we can't really find that happy medium, but, I mean, when I think your goal is to always be good, so hopefully we
start stringing them together.
Yeah, you know, and Devin, I wanted to say, you know, you really should be getting third line and second line, I mean, even second line time, but right now it seems the Wolfpack are full of guys that really are, you know, they could be playing in the NHL kind of, you know, on the cusp, and it's kind of a good position for the Rangers that you have some guys that can be called up at any time. But also for you, a guy who's trying to make his mark, it kind of works against, you know, your development a little bit. Because like you said, you'd like to see some quality ice time where you're playing shifts and get to work on your other skills like we talked about it. And, you know, I'm looking here at your fight card. I'm looking at your actual fight card. You've had 14 fights this year. I know you're 5'11", but you're fighting some big boys here.
Yeah,
you fight this Patrick Weller?
25.
You have 5 inches and 20 pounds?
That's funny.
Alex,
no, Devin backs down, just so you know. Devin backs down from nobody.
I'm telling you. I mean, this is pretty impressive.
I'm waiting for Devin to square off with, like, Mitch Fritz.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
But I got to tell you, it's pretty impressive. And I watched this fight that Mitch Beck was talking about there. Where you've been against Syracuse, you fought Jordan LaValle and Simon Ferguson. Which was the fight that sparked the comeback, Mitch?
Ferguson? The best way that I can explain for somebody that's listening to it, and I sort of said this to Devin before, and I wrote it in my piece, When Devin and Ferguson were squaring off just before, when the puck dropped, Devin went after him like the gates being removed at a Greyhound race. And he just exploded on him. And it was a short fight, but it was one of the most, if you like fighting, I'm not a big, and I've told this to Devin before, I'm not a big fighting fan. But
what's wrong with you, Mitch?
I watch too much of Food Network. What can I tell you?
They took it off my cable.
But let me tell you something. As far as energy goes, you know, that one shook up Michael Jackson. It was one kind of those brawls. I mean, up and down and in and out. And, you know, while I think Devin landed the far better punches. Wouldn't you say, Dev?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was all over the place. I don't think he really wanted to fight. He was squirming around like he didn't want to get hit. There's nothing I can do about that.
Well, you
certainly. I watched that fight. Devin was sitting in the penalty box. They were still scraping that guy off the ice. He looked like Beetle Bailey when the sergeant used to beat the hell out of him in the car.
You're dating yourself with that reference, Jim.
Oh.
Let me tell you. Beetle Bailey. Come on. Anyway, I wanted to say, this is a question that comes from the chat room. They have a question for Devin. What would you say if John Nasty Marasty looked you dead square in the eye and said, "Let's go, kid"? What would you do?
If John Nasty Marasty looked me square in the eye and said, "Let's go," well, I guess I'd have to do it. I wouldn't have too much choice.
who is that? I don't even know who that is.
He's Syracuse's tough guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's pretty legit. I mean, I don't.
Yeah!
I don't think, to say the least.
Yeah.
I don't think
or illegit.
Hurt that guy. You could take a
what?
Camera and hit him in the head and he wouldn't move.
Yeah, he's quite the tough customer. I mean, I haven't seen the guy fight personally, but my fight insiders tell me that he is crazier than a blank house rat. And
you can hit these guys as many times as you want and he doesn't move.
Well, you know what, Devin? You don't exactly go, you know, falling down on the first hit either.
No. I try not to, that's for sure.
Well, I haven't seen. You know what? I'll tell you something, and you and I are friends, and I will tell you this. I haven't seen you quote unquote lose a fight. There's been quite a few that have been a draw, but I haven't seen you lose a fight this year.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I mean, I worked out pretty hard this summer and got a lot stronger, and you know, I'm trying to when I do fight, I'm trying to fight the bigger guys. That way, you know, if I do lose, it doesn't look as bad.
I believe in your next fight, you're going to be in TNA, aren't you? You're going after Hogan.
Yeah, I need to get into some wrestling. I went to Monday Night Raw last week. That's my bread and butter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
Career after hockey, I'm telling you.
Well, you really should. You know, Ricky O, I told you, the guy who's going to be screaming you for you to fight LeBlanc, he actually announces and promotes a wrestling federation. So,
really?
Maybe you can hook up with him after hockey. His name is Ricky. But, you know, Devin, you got drafted by the Flames. And when you heard you got drafted, I always ask this question of any ex-NHL player or a present player. When you got the word that you were drafted, I mean, where were you and how did you feel? Because I'm always interested. Because I would be on cloud nine.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty funny story. Night of my draft night, I was with a few buddies and we were running back to my house because I heard that I got drafted, and one of my buddies like pushed me to congratulate me from behind, and I hit a pothole and wiped out into a cement block. I ended up getting, I think, like something like 21 stitches in my face, and I was in the hospital room when Calgary called me to let me know that they drafted me.
Whoops.
The next day, my parents had a party for me, and I bit right through my tongue, so I couldn't talk or anything like that. So it's definitely a story I'll always remember, but it wasn't very fun at the time, that's for sure.
And who was the one who told you?
They actually called my cell phone while I was getting stitched up, and I had to tell the doctor I had to take a call, and it was my agent telling me that Calgary selected me.
No, as a Canadian, as a Canadian child, that must have been, you know, extra special for you.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. I mean, as a kid growing up, your goal, you know, to your hockey player to, you know, one day play in the NHL, and you know, on that day I realized that I was, you know, one step closer to maybe one day playing in the NHL. So it was a pretty awesome feeling.
What team were you a fan of as a kid growing up?
I was a Detroit Red Wings fan.
You know, I tell you, it all comes together. And Mitch, I'm glad you asked that question because he's a Detroit Red Wings fan. John O'Grodnik played for the Detroit Red Wings. When John O'Grodnik came up, he played on line with Mike Foligno. Mike Foligno coached Devin in juniors.
I find that really
like, I don't know if you were listening to the, all right, it went a little bit long.
We didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, the guy had, what do you have? 827 points in 928 NHL games. It's hard to cut off a guy like that. You know, I wanted to, but Johnny was just going long. What am I going to do here? I mean, but anyway, I wanted to get, what kind of coach was Mike Foligno?
Oh, Mike was one of the best coaches I've had in my life. You know, he rewarded guys who, you know, went out and worked for him every shift. And I was lucky enough that I was the type of player that he liked. He always used to say that I reminded him of my style of play reminded him of me.
The way he
I messed that up big time, but you know,
don't worry about it.
You reminded him of himself.
Yeah, exactly. But I just had a lot less talent, and you know, he just emphasized that, you know, no matter what's happening, as long as you work hard, you know, good things are going to happen. And I always remembered that, and you know, he's a great coach, and he helped me build a lot of character throughout junior, and I couldn't ask for a better coach in the OHL.
Wow, and you won the team with his son Nick, who's now playing in the National League, and you know,
we had Ben Pouliot too, who's actually in the National League. We had a pretty good team. We got a few guys there floating around in the American League right now. We were a pretty skilled team. It was great to be a part of.
And then you wound up. Now, did you get traded to Sarnia, or how'd that go? What went down?
Yeah, I got my third year in Sudbury. We made a big playoff push, and right at the deadline, we traded for Sarnia's goalie. And I was part of the future consideration deal that I went over to Sarnia in the summer, and then I played my last year of junior with Steven Stamkos.
Right, that's what I was going to get to.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. What a talent.
It's awesome. It was definitely a pleasure playing with him. He's definitely the most skilled player I think I've ever played with.
I mean, and now he's just exploding. I mean, he's shooting from everywhere. What a talent, I tell you.
It's just a shame that Barry Melrose kind of buried him at the start of last year. I mean,
saw what got buried at the end of that story, Barry Melrose. So, you know, and you also played with Zach Stortini.
Yeah, my first year was his last year, and I mean, he was a man child in the OHL. He's fallen off a little bit. Don't get me wrong, he's still pretty tough, but I remember going into the gym in Sudbury, and there'd be three or four of us just on his back mauling him, and he'd still throw us all around.
I love it. That's a great one. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe,
hopefully
I can meet up with him in the Rangers jersey sometime soon and maybe throw him around a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can assure you, folks that are listening, Devin's not kidding.
Devin's
down from nobody. That's one of the most exciting things about watching him play. It doesn't matter who comes at him. You know, he doesn't back away. He's not afraid to go after anybody. And yet, you know, we're talking about that a lot, but you really don't get to see. And I've seen it many times because I've watched every game Devin's played. Devin has good hands. And when he's getting the opportunity, I mean, scoring is not something you do like putting on your shoes and socks. You know, and a lot of people write it off, well, you know, he had a good chance, he missed, or he had a good – that's all timing. And when you're not playing that much – and you're not getting the kind of quality minutes, you can't get that timing the way it is. And I think it's phenomenal that G has seen to it to give Devin more time. And tomorrow is going to be a big game. We were talking about that before. It's an important game for Devin and his development. And
hopefully I can find the score sheet tomorrow and you know, prove to Kenny that I do belong on the third line and, you know, deserve more than 3 or 4 minutes a night.
Well, I'll tell you, Devin, the reaction to you, I know you can't see the chat room. Everybody's loving you. They'll say, oh, this kid is funny. We love him. Can't wait to see him up on the big club. And you know, once those minutes come, you know, you'll get those chances to score. And, you know, Mitch Beck, I respect his opinion as far as the Wolfpack go. And if he says you're a Steve Avery type who can get here, listen, the Rangers need you.
We need some kind of
get a little energy for the boys.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one quick question because I know we're getting close to, you know, running out of time. But Devin, when you were there when Sean Avery came up last year, right? Or came down last year, right?
Yeah.
What kind of things did you learn from him while he was down there?
I actually learned a lot from Sean because we kind of play the you know, a similar style of game. I mean, obviously I'm not as talented as Sean, but you know, I like to think that I'm a little bit tougher than him. But he said whenever you're trying to get under the other team's skin, if that's what you're trying to do, he emphasized that you go after the other team's best player, and I mean that meant a lot, you know, for him to, you know, take time out of, you know, his busy schedule and, you know, try to help me and you know, show support and, you know, show a little faith in me. So it was awesome. And I mean, just to be able to watch him for, you know, however many games he was down here and, you know, see what he did and why he's, you know, one of the best at what he does was, you know, really a good learning experience for me.
I want to ask you about one other thing that you and I discussed privately the other night, and I think it's really, really important. It would make for some really interesting conversation in our last couple of minutes. We were talking about the role that you play and guys that are like you across the AHL and starting to get into the NHL of being an agitator, but that's not somebody that's necessarily 6'4", 250. You said we talked about that, the fact that a lot of the smaller guys now are the ones that are being called upon to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a guy like Daniel Carcillo, who I played against in junior for a couple of years. I mean, he's your prototypical power forward now. I mean, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net, but at the same time, he's, you know, he's pretty tough, and he's not really going to back down from anyone. Another guy like that is, you know, Jared Bull. He's maybe 6'3", 200 pounds, and he's fighting everyone in the league. I think, you know, guys like George Laron,
yeah,
and those guys are kind of dwindling out of the game now because of, you know, the new rules, and they don't have the speed to keep up with the game. So, you know, hopefully I can find my scoring touch here in Hartford and, you know, salvage a year here and put up some points in the second half and, you know, show that I can score at the pro game, you know, along with you know, mixing my fists in the odd time.
Now, how long is your deal for? Are you signed for for one more year, or is this your last year?
Yeah, I signed a three-year deal, so one more year after this.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring up, you know, you got you had a tryout agreement with the Columbus Blue Jackets. You went to the Traverse City Rookie Tournament with them, but they didn't offer you a contract, so you went to the Rangers. How'd that goal all go down?
Yeah, I signed an agreement with them, and I think it went till September 17th or something like that. I'm not sure about the date, but I had a really good camp there. I think I had, like, you know, two or three goals and, you know, two or three scraps in four games. They offered me an American League contract, and then New York came back and called my agent and offered me a three-year NHL-AHL contract. So,
that's great.
Yeah, so I had to wait until my contract with Columbus was up for me to come to Hartford. And, you know, it was kind of tough because I hadn't been playing hockey for, you know, 2-3 weeks, and then I had to jump right into, you know, the AHL season. So it was definitely a tough learning experience to start my AHL career, but, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything right now.
Well, Devin, I'm telling you, I think the future is going to be bright, especially the Rangers are going to need somebody to stir things up because Donald Brashear turning 38, I got a feeling he's not going to be with the Rangers next year. And we're going to need turning 39, rather. And he is, you know, he is. They're going to be looking for some toughness. And I hope they look to the two guys we talked to. Mitch Beck brought us Dale Weiss.
And he's quite the player too. I mean, he's an awesome power forward. He definitely combines toughness with scoring too.
You mentioned Donald Brashear. He's still on the Rangers?
Yeah, he is. But, you know, listen, it's not his fault. It's
I thought he was driving the bus at this point.
Oh, come on. The mind is willing, but the body is not able in Brashear's case. But, guys, Devin, I'm going to have you on the show again because I feel like I shortchanged you, and I don't like that feeling. So if you want to come on tomorrow on my show, well, I think you got a game tomorrow. But,
yeah, we got a game.
Yeah, I'm going to have you on again. All right.
All right, I'd love to come on.
Yeah, maybe I'll have you and Dale on and Mitch. It'll be a whole three-ring circus.
Time, it'll be like the circus on the radio.
But there's only so many voices that can talk at the same time.
Oh, well, that's true. Well, I'll shut up for once.
Well,
all right,
you know,
we got to go. We're pressed for time. I'm so sorry. Mitch, do you have anything to say in parting?
Well, I was just going to tell you, we should have a really big surprise for you next week, but I can't tell them because I haven't confirmed it yet.
Oh, I'm psyched.
I'm bringing some of the Charlotte cheerleaders, I think.
Oh, holy!
That's never a bad
boy.
Excuse me. If we're having cheerleaders, they need to be in studio. They are not. They do not. They do not do phone interviews.
Theater of the mind, my friend. Theater of the mind.
In studio. No, I've seen your mind. No thanks.
Take care, fellas, and thanks so much for joining us. I really
thank guys. Thanks.
My pleasure. Hold on, Devin.
All right.
We're in the podcast, I believe. Yes, show is on, but not streaming. Speaking of next week, the Rangers have a game next Tuesday night against the Devils, and we have Bob Brooks scheduled. So I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know how you want to handle that. And then Mitch is talking about his spot on next week's show. So I don't know how you want to handle that. we'll have to talk about the schedule, I guess.
We'll get it all straight. But Johnny O was talking, like crazy.
Yeah, definitely. He was, that was unexpected. It really was.
He was the most talkative guest we ever had.
And all the guests we've ever had, we've never had a guy who was so quick to point out all his stats. I'll tell you that.
I got him from everything. Who he played with, why he was benched.
Right.
You know, I mean, really. He even knew why other guys were getting benched and they shouldn't have been traded. And I didn't know people paid attention to that, but, you know, Johnny O was great. I mean, I'd have him on again if we ever need to fill a 2 hours. He could talk the whole 2 hours. We don't have to do the show.
Yeah,
how about him and Adrian Francis? They could do a filibuster.
Hello? Are you still
there?
I lost the switchboard. Mandar, are you there?
I'm here.
Ricky, are you
there?
Ricky, are you there?
I'm here, yeah. How are you guys?
What's up,
Ricky? Okay, I just wanted to bring you guys on to say thank you for listening and taking part. And
what's going on in that USA game? 5-3, how much left?
Got 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Wow.
If they
win, Canada's going to go berserker with.
Oh, yeah, right. And with the Olympics next month, they're going to be even going crazy more.
Yeah.
Oh. I hope they did it. I predicted it, Jim. I told Chris Kreider that the USA would win.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. All right, is there a show tomorrow night?
There is a show tomorrow night before the game. You know how I plan these things. Wait a minute.
Does that mean 5:30, big guy?
5:30, if you could make it, man, I would love it.
But of course, I would never miss a show if I can help it. If I'm not flying,
if you knew about it,
he would never miss. He would never miss a show except the last four.
Wow. Oh, that's so unfair!
Oh, bullshit!
I thought Devin Diomede was really great. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was.
Those fighting guys are, right?
But from what Ricky says, and I watched some of his fights, he doesn't look that impressive. He looks like just like a scrapper.
Did you hear Nick Beck say he hasn't lost a fight all year?
I know.
I don't think Mitch watches
the game.
One of the fights. Yeah, one of the fights on hockey fights that I watched, he got shit beat out of him. I forget who the guy was, but, yeah, he definitely got the worst of it.
Listen, the kid's scrappy, and he'll go with anybody. You know, I said that a couple times, but he doesn't win much at all.
Yeah. He's not even like P.J. Stock scrappy where he'll win or just, you know, land a lot of punches.
He's not like you, Ricky.
But, well, I landed a couple today.
Yeah, Ricky,
George,
you had a fight
scrappy.
Today?
Yeah, Ricky got tossed out of the league today.
What?
And the worst part is the guy who owns the place where we play is one of my best friends. I get him autograph appearances all the time for guys. He's like, yeah, you got to take the rest of the season off.
What happened? What was the incident?
One of my guys is in his mid-50s. He plays with us, and he got slew-footed, and his helmet came off. So when he hit the floor, he got knocked out.
You playing with Brashear?
And it was scary. Like when he hit his head, his eyes rolled back, and it was a nerve-wracking thing. And when we got him up, the kid who did it to him started laughing at him and making fun of like he couldn't stand up. And it just got heated. It was stupid. Not a proud moment. It wasn't something, you know, I'll be showing my kids on video until they're at least 15.
What'd your wife say?
You did what we're begging the Rangers to do.
She just ignores me.
Oh, wow.
She's been around way too long to even have this stuff faze her.
That's
I told you that Billy
right
Smith
there.
Story off the air. I mean, you know. If she can live through the Billy Smith stuff, then she can live through me getting the roll-on.
You got to tell that story to these two guys and also tell them about the Peruka puck.
The Peter Peruka pucks? the 500 I have sitting in my living room? I use them to hold up my laptop as a vent.
What did you do, an autograph signing with him, and you had him sign 500 pucks or something?
I did a signing with him, and it was 3 days before the trade deadline.
Oops.
And once he got traded, usually what I do is, like, you know, after you pay the guys a certain amount of money, and then when it's over, you just have all this extra stuff, and you just have them sign them, and I put them out in my store or whatever. Well, he was funny as hell, because one of the stories I forgot to tell you, Mouth, was he's a big favorite with the women around the garden. This guy had tons of young girls show up for him, and this one girl came, and I don't know what her deal was, but she just looked like a professional, but she wasn't very dressed properly type of woman, put it that way. And she kept trying to sit on his lap, and Peter looks at me and he goes, "I took class, sexual harassment. We cannot let her sit on my lap. The league tell me no." And I started laughing. I go, "The league?" He goes, "We take whole class on this. She tried to sue me," he goes. It was just so funny.
Ah, that's smart.
Yeah, like, he was all into that, but, like, it was just really funny because, like, everybody kept trying to hug and kiss him, and he kept looking over at me and going, "The class, the class." He lived over in Trump all by himself.
What kind of pucks did he? Were they Ranger pucks?
I legitimately have 300 New York Ranger logo pucks signed by Peter Peruka sitting in my store. And it was funny because when we did the Varo signing, you know, that was a last-minute thing. He filled in for Orr when Orr canceled on us. And I took the pucks and put them away. I didn't even have him sign any. He's like, "Is there any extra stuff?" I'm like, no, those are for the next signing. Those are just extra.
Now tell him about the Billy Smith, because I think that is the best story that I've heard
Billy
in years.
Billy Smith was going to an Islander game on September 16th, 1991. It was my 21st birthday. And a whole bunch of us went to Long Island to have Long Island iced teas legitimately on my 21st birthday. Oh, you saw that, huh?
Yeah.
Little jam there, huh?
A little bit.
So we had a bunch of Long Island iced teas in the afternoon, and Billy Smith and his wife and his kid were getting in an elevator. And I said, "Hey, Billy, how are you? My name is Rikitazu, and I work for Siemens." And he goes, "Siemens?" I go, "Yeah, the rug company. We want our toupee back." And I grabbed it on his head. His wife started cursing me out, screaming at me, and his wife was yelling. I'm running out of the hotel, that Marriott that was across the street, trying to get out with it, and she's screaming, call the cops, and we all got separated, and this was in a day with no cell phones, and my friend had the keys to the car, and we had to get separated because like 10 cop cars showed up, and we had to run out of that parking lot, and we're all scrambled all over Long Island, never being there before. And it was just a fun, because the cops were looking for us. We couldn't go to the game now because it was a big interrogation. They were asking people what we looked like, and it was terrible. We tormented poor Billy.
Stealing a toupee, that's got to be a third degree felony right there.
He's just a miserable guy too. He married a real butchy looking woman. That's probably what it was.
You get him and Chico Resch together, you could really do some damage with rug stealing.
Oh, Chico, he's never bombed during the game. You ever really hear Chico slur his words by the third period? He's terrible.
Yeah, I had one encounter with Chico and it was great, so I give him a pass on that homerism he does it during the game.
Oh, I don't care. He's a homer. I think he's funny as heck.
You know, but and then you have the Mick Fakoda story, which I like.
Oh, Mick spitting on my girl.
Yeah, tell him that story, and then we gotta go.
Oh, we gotta go. Well, in the early '90s, they used to play the rookie games before the regular preseason game. So, like 3-4 in the afternoon at the Garden, there would be a game. And I was good friends with a bunch of the Binghamton guys at the time, and I was hanging out with Jim Lados and them. And Fakoda was just going all over the ice, and he got pounded by Lados in a fight. And I was right behind the penalty box at the Garden, screaming that his father's a gerbil, and that his dad is up Richard Gere's butt, and all kinds of just horrible stuff.
Now, how old were you at this time?
Teenager, probably.
Yeah.
What was Fakoda? 88 to like, I was probably 18 to 19.
Okay.
And screaming all kinds of stuff like your dad's a gerbil, blah, blah, blah. Like just really rude stuff. So he flips out and tries to climb the glass to get at me, and he's throwing stuff and everything. He gets taken out. They calm him down. They go to the locker room. The next night they're playing the Meadowlands. They're playing the Devils. And I'm sitting front row dead center, and he sees me in the runway, and he comes out, and he's just hot as can be, and he just loogies at me, and I duck, and it hits the girl I was dating right in the face. So 10 years later, he's with the Islanders.
You had to break up with her at the end of the night?
Oh, it was just funny. I couldn't stand her anyway. It was, like, no big deal.
But you
couldn't
tell what you were calling him at the game.
Oh, all kinds of gerbil. Oh, fuck, Kevin.
No, the monkey.
A monkey in a cage. You're a monkey in a cage.
Yeah.
And I was doing the whole thing while he's sitting in the penalty box. And 10 years later, we're at the Coliseum, and I see him, and I walk up to him. Hey, Mick, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. And he's real friendly, and he goes, call me a monkey in a fucking cage again. He goes, I'll break your head.
Call me a monkey in a
He remembered 10 years later, he still wanted to hit me.
And then he said, I apologize for spitting your girlfriend.
Yeah, we talked after that. He was a pretty cool guy. He was a guy, I'll tell you the goddamn truth, he was, you talk about a guy who made the most of his talent, because he was just a horrible hockey player, and he knew it. But
right.
there's some good fight tapes out there. I'll send you a mouth with him in juniors, going after like an 80-year-old guy in the crowd. Like, no exaggeration, the guy had to be 75 to 80 years old, and was just like calling him a goon, and he's climbing the glass, throwing sticks at him, and he was whacked.
Boy, USA is hanging on for dear life here, man.
2 minutes
right,
and 33 seconds. Go watch the game,
I got to go watch the end of this game.
All right, guys. Take care.
See you tomorrow.
Take care.
Eddie, I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.